broadcast. So right now we have 11 people throughout the world participating. Of those who have signed in, because not everybody signs in, but we have Anandini Rose in Dallas. We have Roxana in Lima, Peru. Sonam in Dallas. Gisela Ravi in Argentina. Pavana Gora Gopal in Los Angeles. And anybody else? That's it. So let's give them a big hearty ball. Okay. So I can talk about anything. All right. So let's see what I'm inspired to talk about. The main thing that I'm studying now in my personal spiritual growth is what I call Harer Nama Eva Kevalam, which is the fundamental building block of this whole Krishna conscious philosophy. That being that everything can be achieved by simply chanting the holy name of God. And it's a topic that I am studying in depth. It's a topic that personally I need lots of work and I have to put more and more effort in. We begin by understanding something from the Bhagavad Gita. Do you follow a particular religion yourselves? Okay, Buddhism. Yourself, sir? Anything? A good atheist. Okay. I can hang with that. No problem. All right. This is going to be a good challenge. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, which is our main book that we follow, it is the turning point of the book is when Arjuna turns to his friend Krishna and says to him, I want our relationship as friends to take a pause. And Krishna, I want you to act as my guru. Now, a guru is a spiritual trainer or teacher or master. So Arjuna has requested his friend Krishna to take that role as spiritual master because Arjuna is confused about what he should do. And that is where the teachings of Bhagavad Gita begin, when Arjuna accepts Krishna as his guru. Just as, if we can understand it in this way, if I want to be a medical practitioner, I can't just study books. I have to learn procedures. I have to be trained how to become a medical practitioner. Or I want to be an engineer or a lawyer. There has to be training. Or even say you want to be a great athlete, an Olympian, or right now the basketball championship is going on. Even someone is very gifted and talented, still they need a coach, they need a trainer in order to reach higher and higher levels of perfection in their craft. So a guru, a spiritual master, is someone who I submit to and learn from, who will teach me how to reach higher and higher levels of spiritual life. Now, for the atheist. There are different grades of atheists. There's no generic atheist. There are different levels of atheists. I won't get personal with you, so I'll just speak in general terms. So, one kind of atheist says there is no such thing as God. It's an opiate of the masses. It is a social convention. It's for people who are less intelligent. That's one kind of atheist. Yes, sir? No, well, the agnostic doesn't know, can't say yes, can't say no. Like I said, there's different kinds. So do you fall into that category of agnostic?
No, I believe in God.
You do believe in God. Oh, but you said atheist. Okay, so... That doesn't make you an atheist. No. No. We're just discussing. No. We're finding out. So you do believe in God. Okay. So that means technically you're not an atheist. No. Hey, there's nothing to be sorry about. We're amongst friends. Everybody loves each other. If I could, we'd do a group hug. We hate nobody. We love everybody. So, let me ask you this then. So you do believe in God. Do you believe that something of you is eternal? Good. See, you're at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. This is where the Bhagavad Gita begins. That there is something which lives on. We won't discuss exactly what that is, but you believe in God, and you believe there's something, we're not going to put a name on it, something that lives forever. Very good. Oh, please, you do yourself an injustice when you say you're an atheist. Because the atheist won't accept you in their club. If you believe in God and that there's something eternal that lives on. So, you could say you're undeclared and independent. You know, some people are Republicans, you're an independent. Which is okay. It's okay. It's all right. So, with that in mind, now I can change directions. I can, you know, go to the next level. So, before we go to the next level, I ask everyone to raise your hands. And repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Very good. Okay? All right. So... There is a line by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaito Darpana Marjanam. Chaita means, can be translated as mind, consciousness. So, whatever yoga or process one follows, the beginning point is controlling the mind. The mind has a tendency to wander, and to control the mind, that is a difficult task for anyone, to get control of the mind, because the mind is so powerful, formidable. So yoga, whatever yoga one, and there's many, many yogas, but whatever yoga one practices, controlling the mind is the first step. So Lord Chaitanya, he says that the first order of business is to cleanse the mind. The mind is like a mirror. When a mirror is covered by dust, when the mirror is covered by fog or you take a shower, the steam, you can't see your reflection. So the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, is that God is in your heart. But because the mirror of the mind, the mirror of the heart, is covered by dust, is covered by this mist, we can't see God and we also can't see ourselves. So within our heart is ourselves, our real self, the eternal principle, call it soul or spirit, the eternal you resides in the heart, and also residing in your heart is God Himself. But the mirror of the mind, the mirror of the heart is covered by layers and layers and layers of dust. In order to see ourselves and God, that mirror has to be cleansed. So Lord Chaitanya recommends this chanting of the name of God as the primary process to cleanse the mirror of the mind. What is clogging up the mind? What is dirtying the mind? It is called material desires. Material desires means that I want to be the enjoyer. I want to be the controller. And I want everyone to sing my praises. I want to be the center of attention. I want my senses to be satisfied, to be glorified, fulfilled. And I have unlimited desires to enjoy everything I see around me. So because of all of this, which we call false ego, this prevents me from seeing God and actually seeing myself. And this chanting process, chanting the names of God, little by little cleanses that. Because this chanting of the names of God, what does it do? It undoes that false ego. Instead of me trying to be God, instead of me trying to be the enjoyer, the proprietor, or the center of attention, I give that up and instead surrender and submit myself as the eternal servant of God, which I am constitutionally made. So this chanting process is a gradual process of cleansing the heart from all kinds of misgivings, misidentifications. I think I'm a man, I think I'm a woman, I think I'm important, I think I'm special. But actually, according to Bhagavad Gita, I am simply the eternal servant of God. And when I can fully accept that concept, until I can fully realize that, yes, I'm nothing more, nothing less than the eternal servant of God, up until that point, God does not reveal Himself. God reveals Himself when anyone, myself, you, when we fully surrender and say, my Lord, I am your eternal servant. I have no other desire. And how to get to that stage? It is a gradual process of cleansing all these impure desires, lust, anger, greed, cleansing that, getting that out of the mind and come to the clean stage. When the mirror is cleansed, then I can see who I really am, and I'll also be able to see God. The revelation is in the heart. Therefore, in this process, the primary practice is this chanting of the name of God. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now, there is a mood, there is a mentality which will make that easy. Because it's not easy. So there's a tactic which will make this easy. And that tactic is called humility. And there is no limit to how humble one can be. To be meek and humble means, first of all, I accept, at least theoretically, I'm not anything but the insignificant servant of God. And everyone I see belongs to God, not to me. And all this material energy is not for my enjoyment, but it is meant to serve and glorify and satisfy the senses of God. I am simply the insignificant servant. And with that mentality, and also like a tree, I should be very tolerant. The tree is very tolerant. It tolerates the heat, the cold, the wind. People come and take its fruits and flowers and leaves. People come and cut it down. The tree never protests. The tree is the emblem, the meditation of humility and tolerance. Tolerance. And rather than seek praise and worship of me, I should try to see God or good in everyone. Instead of being me conscious, I should try to see, oh, God is in her heart. God is in his heart. And how can I see the little good? I know for some people it's like, geez, how can I find good in that guy? Like your boss, right? But somehow, my job is to see how is there in that person. There must be something good, something. In this way, with this mood of utter humility and tolerance and not being me conscious, Lord Chaitanya says, this is the way you will find this chanting easy. It will come very, very easy. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. All right. Now, questions. Any question, any topic. Sham, you begin. Because he always has good questions. This is a very good question. By the way, we now have 16 people online. So we're doing good. Give them a big, say hello to everybody. Yes. So you've touched on a very good point. And that is, since God is a person, there is reciprocation. We learned this from the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says that I reciprocate with the individual. As soon as that person takes one step towards me, I reciprocate. And what is that reciprocation? The line in the Bhagavad Gita, Pratyak Shavagamam Dharmam. It's one of my favorite lines. Because without it, then it's an empty post-dated check. Without this principle of reciprocation, then what is it? You're telling people, be good, be humble, deny yourself, and when you die, then you get your reward, post-dated check. Like the government sometimes tries to do, right? There was a fear of they didn't have enough money for the tax returns. So nobody likes a post-dated check. So this line from the Bhagavad Gita, pratyakshavagamam dharmam, means that there is reciprocation. Look at me. I wasn't born Indian. I was born an American hedonist. Unless there was reciprocation, trust me, I wouldn't be doing what I do. But there is reciprocation. What is that reciprocation? From within, you start to feel good. You start to feel happy. You start to feel peaceful. For instance, all this week, I had an infection. So finally, my wife said to me, when are you going to go to the doctor? Because it's getting worse. So today I went to the doctor. He prescribed some antibiotic. And immediately, there is a difference. The antibiotic is working already after the first pill. Because earlier in this week, I could hardly talk. I was like whispering. So in the same way, if somebody sincerely chants or does what we call bhakti, there is an immediate reciprocation from God in the heart, and that is what propels you to go further and further and further and further. It's not that I have realized Krishna yet, but I have every reason to believe, based on, you know, 35, almost 40 years of practice, I see how I was when I started in 1973. And I have every reason to believe that down the road, the full reciprocation, the full benefit will be accrued. So it has to do with, there is reciprocation from Krishna. And that reciprocate, and nobody can quantify it. It's yourself. For instance, the best part of the program is when we eat. Right? So when you're eating, you know, okay, I want more of that. Not so much of that. I like that. Give me more of that. And also, you know, no, that's no more. I've eaten 20 glob jamuns. So you, and I don't know, especially the host wants to see, oh, eat more, Prabhu. I've been to some homes, right? I've already eaten 3 plates, and then the host comes, no, Prabhu, from my hand you have to eat 1 more samosa. So the thing is, the host doesn't know, but I know, well, that's it. There's no more room, right? So in the same way, anyone who is sincerely chanting and practicing knows from within how they are progressing. And that's why they continue. Not a post-dated check. If this process didn't work, I would have been gone the second day. But I experienced immediate effects. Maybe small, maybe, but enough. Enough for me to come back day 2. Enough to come back year 2. Little by little, you begin to accumulate and you begin to see how there is reciprocation. It's not a blind process. Are you satisfied with that? Who? Yes, Sachi Dula Ladas. Okay, When I do nice, because, you know, there's this expression that they use in couples therapy. You should spend quality time, right? You should have dinner together as a family, right? You see this TVs and, you know, you should spend quality time with your significant other. So if you spend quality time with God in your heart, okay? So what do I experience? For me, my experience is, number one, my mind, which was very disturbed, starts to come down. Instead of it being on 12, it's now down to 6. Okay? Little by little, the craziness in the mind and all the pressure starts to come down. Okay? That's one thing. All right? But it depends on spending quality time. Okay? Then another thing that comes for me personally, little by little, Krishna knows what I want to do, what I'm trying to do, and there's always puzzles. For me, life is like Sudoku. Anybody know what a Sudoku? Right? So in a Sudoku puzzle, there's only one solution. Right? And the trick is to find out, the numbers got to go right. So for me, life is one Sudoku puzzle after another. So as I'm chanting in my Sudoku world, Krishna all of a sudden will say, try this. And it's like, oh, that was great. That comes to me in terms of my preaching, preparing for my classes, with my music, like that. Krishna will give me little hints. It didn't come out this way, try this way. Oh. So for me, that is what I get. Lord Chaitanya says, and I really like this, Lord Chaitanya says, that if one sincerely does chanting and hearing of God, then all varieties of devotional service are awakened in the heart. So what does that mean? In other words, if you spend quality time hearing and chanting, Krishna will give you ideas, inspiration, how you can serve. For instance, those of you who have deities at home, so if you have deities and you dress them, if you nicely chant, Krishna will inspire you, dress me like this today. Or if you are a cook, those who cook, if you spend quality time hearing and chanting, Krishna will inspire you how to cook very, very nicely. And in this way, you'll see some reciprocation. Are you satisfied with that? Next question. Who would like? Yes, Nandini Radha.
How do we know that God is happy with us? Because we all have the four defects. And the imperfect sense is not even a sign that we have.
Well, I already said one way. You start to feel reciprocation. But I have a feeling I know where you're going with your question. So there is a external or broad way, and that is we don't really know, but if we follow the instructions of his representative, the guru, the spiritual master, and we sing every day, Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasada, yasya prasadan nagati katopi, dayam stuvam stasya yashastri sandam. So, if we are obedient to God's representative or God's servant, automatically we know that God is pleased. So if someone has a bona fide representative of God as their guru, as their teacher, which was supposed to be the original topic for tonight, we'll do that another time. But if one has an actual bona fide representative of God and obeys His instructions, then automatically you'll be pleasing God. Did you have another angle of vision? Well, there is a three-way checks and balances system. We do have the revealed scriptures. We do have, you have at least, you have accepted a spiritual trainer, teacher, who you have every reason to believe is a bona fide representative of God. And you also have other devotees who you respect and you have admiration for, who you have consulted in the past. When all three are in alignment, then you're good. You're good. And again, if you are walking the walk, if you're talking the talk, two things automatically occur. Your desire to enjoy the material world decreases. And your desire to render spiritual service increases. Here is Friday night. What are most people doing on Friday night? Right? Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's Friday night. And this is summer, right? School is ending, right? The kids want to partay. But that's not you, is it? You teach in a school. So you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? So where are you on a Friday night? On a Friday night, you are sitting on the floor, hearing and trying to learn more about spiritual life, God consciousness. So for you, you should know, I must be doing something right, because you're no longer, or shall we say, you have lost any kind of inferior engagement. You do your job, and apart from doing your job, everything else you do, tell me if I'm wrong, you do your job, because you have to work in this world, but other than that, everything else you do is for spiritual life, yes or no, right? You're not going out to clubs, and you're not wasting time on anything. You are a yogi. You are a practical, living example of a yogi. You do your job, okay? Everything else, all your other spare time, spiritual improvement. Therefore, you have seen no more material life, more and more spiritual life. And you're praying. I can guarantee it. You are praying for less and less work and more devotional. Am I right? You would love it if the day came I'm sure there's going to be a day that you're going to retire, right? So when you retire, what? You're going to have a bucket list? When you retire, are you going to say to your husband, I want to go here, I want to go there? No. When you retire, you want to go. Where will you want to go? Visit temples. And you're going to want to do more and more direct spiritual activities. Therefore, at least for you, you're on the right path. What else? I know you have a question. Somebody just confirmed on the internet. Yes. Yes, Prabhu. You're entitled to do that.
You mentioned the idea in your talk, and I recently heard the same thing in another talk that, of course, Bhagavad Gita is a whole book about questions and answers. The first verse starts with a question. And therefore, during this whole 700 verses, we find several good questions by Arjuna and several good answers by Lord Krishna. And there are two questions that repeat, one in the beginning part of Bhagavad Gita and one in the later part of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna is asking Krishna, okay, I get it, that this is what I need to do. But if you're speaking Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, to the whole world, why do people not take to spiritual life? Why do people not come to a point of understanding what is their relationship with God? So he asked that question in the beginning part of the Bhagavad Gita, and he asked the same thing towards the end. And in both instances, Krishna beautifully answers what Nirantar Prabhu described, that in the first part he said, lust, born out of your own, of your material desires, that element of lust is what blinds people from doing the right thing. And that lust pervades in every aspect of our life, whether it's economy, social, political, medical, everywhere there's that element of lust that manifests and binds us and prevents us from going forward in our spiritual life. And towards the end, Arjuna asked the same question again. All right, I've heard so much about who you are. I've seen your universal form. I've seen you, your real form. Now I know what my duty is. But still, why do people not take to proper study of the Vedas? And then Krishna explains that it is because of your own nature. It is because of the way you are, what your nature is, what you eat, how you live your life, that will allow you to come to a point of studying scriptures or the Vedas or gaining spiritual knowledge. And then he explained the whole idea of your nature governed by the three modes of material nature. It's just two comments to add to your.
Very good. More questions and comments? Yes, Siam.
One of the things that when we are approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as you were saying that, you know, we are hoping for reciprocation in a relationship with the Lord, and sometimes our expectations are not met. Like, I may expect that, or somebody expects health improvement or some material expectation is not met, and that becomes a stress point. So I'd like to know how does one handle when that one believes that one is practicing, yet some in their mind their needs are not being met.
So when I explained what is the mentality of a chanter, humility, tolerance, the very next verse of Lord Chaitanya Shikshastakam is another aspect of how one should be thinking. And that aspect is, my Lord, I don't expect anything from you. I don't want anything material. Only thing I want is service. So, if one has expectations of anything material, if one has expectations of anything other than service, then yes, man proposes and God disposes. Sometimes, just like your children, they come to you. You don't give them everything you want. Why? Because sometimes they ask for the craziest thing. Or sometimes they ask for something which is not really good for them. For us, we are God's little children. So when we approach God with some expectation, God, being a considerate father, says, uh-uh. I'm not going to give you that because I know better. It's not good for you. So the intelligent or advanced yogi realizes God is going to give me what I really need, not what I want. That has been my motto for the past 5 years. When people ask me, "So Nirantara, how you doing?" My standard response is, Krishna is giving me what I need, not what I want. And little by little, I'm realizing giving me what I need is the happiest platform. Because if I get what I want, at the end of the day, I'm not happy. I think by getting this, I'll be happy. But everybody has that experience. You got what you wanted Christmas Day in America. It always happened since I was a little kid. Christmas Day comes. We made our Christmas list. We gave it to Santa. We didn't know it was our father. But we made our Christmas list. Christmas came, and sometimes you got everything you asked for. By the end of Christmas Day, you're miserable. Why? Because you broke the toy, or you got what you wanted, and you go, that's all it is? That's everything in this material world is the same way. Everything is like a toy. There's a limit. There is happiness, but there's a limit. And when you reach that limit, you go, that's it? That's it? So, the experienced, intelligent devotee knows, Lord, just give me what I need. Because I don't really know what I want. My mother used to always say that in regards to eating. Nikki, your eyes are bigger than your stomach. Now my stomach is much bigger than my head. But it was true. So the devotee thinks, my Lord, you will give me what I need. Therefore, my mentality is, give me more service. Because that will really make me happy. And I pray for that. I pray, let me come to Moor Park more. You cannot invite me enough here. You invite me every week, I'll be happy. Why? Because by doing these programs, that's when I feel happy. Yes, Pranjali. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. What does Lord Chaitanya say? My Lord, you can embrace me and make me feel oneness with you, or you can neglect me and make me brokenhearted. Still, you are my Lord. So, how should the devotee deal with this, the reversals, the tests, the unexpected going south? Yes. Yes, because, yes, so you didn't think, but obviously he did. Okay, that's the thing. So you remain humble that, really? I needed this? Okay. You're surrendered. Okay? And how I explain it is that Krishna is not so much concerned with the service, but Krishna wants to see, all right, how do you react now in this situation? This happens to those who go out and distribute books. They go out one day, the books are just flying. They come home, all the books are sold, their name is read the next morning. Nirantara distributed 108 Bhagavad Gitas in 5 minutes. You go out the next day, you do the same lines, you dress the same, you can't sell one book. Krishna wants the books to go out, yes, but Krishna is not so much concerned with the result as he is, I'm going to put you in a situation, I want to see how you respond. Then I'll know how much you love me. When you get married, right? So, I hate to put, how should I say, I hate to burst your bubble, but after a while, there's no more honeymoon. And after a while, it's you and him, and it's like, okay. That day comes when you realize he's he and you're you. Now what do we do? Okay? We got this, you know, we got an apartment or a house. We got kids. We got a job. You know, your life, one day it comes. I don't know if it's 30 or 40. The day comes and you realize, this is it, folks. It ain't getting any better. Okay? At that point, then you realize what you two are really made of. On the honeymoon, it's great, right? You're in Fiji, Hawaii. Right? Everything is wonderful. But once the grind sets in and life becomes routine, that's when you realize what is the real love, what is the real friendship. That's when you realize it. So Krishna, if everything was easy, then what is the meaning, I love you? The I love you is really shown when there's a severe examination. Then you, and not only that, not only God, but for yourself, you realize, wow, I was put in this tremendous situation and I passed it. That's great. And what does Kunti say? Kunti says, my Lord, when we were in calamitous, dangerous positions, we called out to you, you saved us. Now, the war is over, my son is king of the world, and you're leaving? No! Bring back the calamities. Because with the calamities, we had you. So, the devotee thinks, and the devotee knows, what is today's challenge going to be? That's how a devotee thinks. You learn that when you become very accustomed to preaching. Whether it be book distribution or like what I do. It's like, he had told me 2 weeks ago, I want you to do a class on this, 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 this. So for 2 weeks I've been preparing. When I got here, Krishna said, eh. The whole thing changed. I had to do this, I had to do that. That's why in the beginning I was stumbling, bumbling, because I was like reformatting the hard drive in my brain. That's why I only spoke a little bit and went to questions and answers. Right? That's the way preaching is. You have an idea, okay, but then Krishna says, no. Try this. Let's see how you do. That makes this whole thing very dynamic. You don't know what's going to happen. Like I have a program tomorrow night. Now I do a program at Kundan Kumar's house twice a month. And there's, you know, I think I'm going to do this. I think I'm going to do that. But I know you can't trust tricky Krishna because he has a way of saying, And you just have to go with the flow, as we say. And when you have that, that's detachment. That's detachment. Okay, Krishna, whatever you have in store for me, I'll go with it. That's how you prove your surrender. Okay? What else? Yes! Okay. If you're not a surrendered soul to Krishna, then yes, everything that happens is due to your past karma. So materially, you cannot increase or decrease. You're going to get what you're destined to get. You're going to, due to your past actions and also present, you are going to expect this much happiness and this much suffering. You work for a living, yes? You get a paycheck, right? And in that paycheck, federal government takes this much, state takes, everybody takes, right? That paycheck is set. Unless you get a raise, that's your paycheck, right? Your karma is just like a paycheck. It has already been calculated from the end of your last life. Your present karma paycheck is already spelled out. Now, if you surrender to Krishna, if you say, Krishna, I want to be your devotee, I surrender, everything changes. You're no longer on that paycheck. Now, whatever happens, happens between you and Krishna. You follow? Now, if you fully surrender, if you say to Krishna, Krishna, from this day forward, I am your devotee. Now, don't worry about your past paycheck. That's gone. Now, whatever happens, it's between you and Krishna. And there's no, you know, Krishna is who he is. And he does what he does. And he's independent. And sometimes he'll squeeze, sometimes he blesses, but he has a plan. That plan is, oh, you surrendered to me? You want to come to me? Okay. So, we can't see the big picture. We think, I used to go through this all the time before I was a Hare Krishna. I would pray to Jesus, I would pray to God, please, I want this. Sometimes I would get it. A lot of times I didn't get it. And I would go, come on, man, I did prayers, I did this, I helped the old lady across the street. Come on, man. I could never figure out why. And then when I learned from Bhagavad Gita and from Prabhupada, then I realized, Krishna gives you what you need, not what you want. And what do I need? If you surrender to Krishna, the only thing you need is to return to him and render service. So it becomes a journey. Your life becomes a journey, and you start to see the journey in terms of how is Krishna ultimately leading me back home, back to Godhead. And it's the yellow brick road. It's the transcendental yellow brick road. Ego in what sense? Yes, yes. Yes, nobody said it was easy. The yellow brick road is not easy. Anybody here? Nobody says it's... Yes. Prabhupada even said, I don't promise you a rose garden. It's It's life. But, the more you begin to trust Krishna, little by little, it becomes easier. It becomes easier. And you start to see how Krishna's helping hand is there. You begin to, I know for my life, so many times, right? My back was against the wall. I was between a rock and a hard place. I didn't know how it was going. And then all of a sudden, I could see Krishna's hand. My favorite story of many. One day, believe it or not, one day I was completely in Maya. 100% deep in the bowels of Maya. And I woke up and I said, oh my God, I'm in complete Maya. Maya means illusion, sin. So luckily I remembered, idiot, start chanting. So I just started chanting incessantly. And within hours, everything changed and I was happy and completely out of illusion. So, for me, I'm a believer because I've seen it in my life. That's why I'm a preacher. I'm a preacher because I'm a true believer. Okay? So, good luck on your path. And when you need help, look around you. You have so much support. Everybody here in this room is ready to help you. Am I right? If he calls you for advice, what are you going to say? I'm going to charge you $100 an hour? No, we're not businessmen. If you call him, you've asked me so many things, right? Have I ever charged you? Have I ever said no? Yes. Good. Yes. Bhagavad Gita says, how can there be any happiness without peace? So peace is first, then happiness. So that peace comes when there is no more sin. When you become, shall we say, bottom line sinless, now you've got peace. Peace is a mental state. I'll tell you one of my favorite stories. About maybe 8-10 years ago, I was in Panama. And I was in this penthouse apartment of a very wealthy Indian man. And some of his relatives from Hong Kong were there. And I did one of these sessions. So after the session, one lady, Indian lady from Hong Kong, very, very, very wealthy, she asked me, Swamiji, can you give me peace? So she thought I had a magic wand. Yes, now have peace. But I don't have that. So I said to her, so, do you eat meat? She goes, oh, I love meat. I go, well, I can't give you peace. So then I said, do you drink liquor? Oh, I love wine. I said, I can't give you peace. Then I asked her third, do you gamble? She said, of course we gamble. I said, how can I give you peace? I said to her, because this is what is stated in Bhagavad Gita, if you want peace, you have to become free from sin. When you are free from sin, now your mind and senses are peaceful. Peace is the platform how happiness comes into your life. We call this the peace formula. Give up sin, Now auspiciousness will come to you little by little by little. What do you think? Good. You're very welcome. We have 20 devotees on the internet. We're doing good. Yes? Do you have a question? Every car salesman will tell you his car is the best, whether it's Hyundai or Lexus. That's his job. Every religion preaches we're the only way. Every religion. There are no exceptions. Everybody tells you we're it and they're going to hell. So, like a car, you've got to do your homework. You've got to find out who's got the best deal, who offers the best program, and it depends what you want, because there are religions to cater to everybody's need. So it depends on you. What are you looking for? What do you want? If you want the absolute truth, if that's someone's desire, Krishna will make an arrangement where they come in contact with finding the absolute truth. If somebody wants, like there are many people, they're religious, but what is their aim? They want to become materially affluent. So there's religions for that. And God in the heart knows, oh, that's what you want? Okay, go here. For the, not you, for the real atheist. The atheist says, I don't want God. So God says, oh, you don't want me? Fine. I'll help you so you never think of me. I'll help you develop a consciousness where you'll never think of me. God is an equal opportunity employer. How you want him, he reciprocates. So for these people, anybody, if the day comes where they truly say, no, I really want the absolute truth, I really want God, then Krishna says, oh, you want me? Okay. Krishna sets up. That happened to me. I was struggling in New York, and that desire came. I remember that day. I was so frustrated. And I was thinking to myself, I want the truth. And soon after that is when I met my first devotee. So, you brought up an interesting point. Why do people still neglect, even though maybe they even know? And that is, we have free will, and God does not interfere with free will. He doesn't touch it. My favorite movie, there's a line from my favorite movie. Free will is like butterfly wings. Once touched, they never get off the ground. So free will, that's what allows love of God to exist. Or any loving relationship is based on free will. Yes. So, I don't know if you know this, but you can tell these people, Oh, you should take one of my books so that you can become a better. I've said to people, I've met people, I don't want this stuff because I'm an atheist. I go, great, take this book, read chapter 16. It'll teach you how to become a pure atheist. Chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita. It's great. Somebody else had a question? Yes. Exactly. That's exactly what we're talking about. In terms of Krishna gives you what you need, not what you want. So, whatever you've already achieved from all your lifetimes, in terms of your abilities, your consciousness, your talents, your good things that you have acquired, your personal karma account, Krishna protects that. Now, say you're in a position, you're at that road where you need something, Krishna will give you what you need to go to the next step. If Krishna thinks you need it, because once you become a devotee, now there's no more material. You're a devotee. You have surrendered to Krishna. This I know. Yes? So, your situation now, even though you have a husband and children, this is also part of your spiritual life. As long as you execute your duties, what did Krishna tell the gopis? Serve the husband, take care of the children. Yes? You know that pastime? You've heard me say it a billion times. Provided you do that, then whatever you do with your family is now part of your spiritual life. Okay? So if what you need is so-called material, and Krishna sees that you need it, he will give you. If he thinks it's, no, you don't need it. Right? You see how it works? So going back to your point. With that free will, Krishna doesn't interfere with the free will. As long as a person still doesn't want to surrender, he doesn't interfere. Therefore, the question then becomes, is there any intervention? Yes. And that is the glorious position of a devotee. A devotee comes into somebody's life and causes an intervention. For me, I had my guitar in my hand. I had my hair down to here. I had my big beard. I was going to 42nd Street in New York City to record an album. I was going to become the next Elvis Dylan Lennon. So I'm walking with my guitar down 5th Avenue or wherever, 42nd Street, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a Martian appears. He has orange clothes, a shaved head, a ponytail, and this white paint on his face. And he appears out of nowhere, right in front of me. And he hands me a card, and then disappears. What was that? I looked at that card, and the card said, chant this mantra, and your life will be sublime. Now, I think I had already heard My Sweet Lord, George Harrison's with the Hare Krishna. I think I knew what the mantra was. All right, I went to the recording session. I was a complete failure. I had my songs, I couldn't sing in tune. The producers were yelling at me, what's wrong with you? Sing the song. I had my girlfriend and her sister in the booth for my inspiration. That I could not record. That was a complete disaster. So my girlfriend and her sister, they went back home. I had to go play a club at night. So after playing the club at night, I was able to do that. So by the time I finally got to my girlfriend's house, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. Now on the bus, so it was at least the train ride and the bus, must have been 2 hours. I was so fried, all I could do for 2 hours on the train and bus was look at that card that said, chant this mantra and your life will be sublime. So I kept staring at that card. After 2 hours, I finally showed up at my girlfriend's house at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I don't know why, but the first words out of my mouth when I saw Linda, I said, Linda, we have to stop smoking marijuana. We have to stop having sex. We've got to chant Hare Krishna. All of a sudden, she became Putana. And she threw me out of the house. Get out of here. Get out of here. And I was like, wow, this mantra really works. And that was the beginning of my belief in Krishna. So that was an intervention. This Martian, I mean, I tell you, it was like this guy just out of nowhere, handed me the card. And then he didn't preach. He just handed me the card and disappeared. All right, what do you want to do now? Where's the boss or Mrs. Boss? You want to do RT now? All right, we've had enough talk, right? No. Anything else? Everybody satisfied? You have one more comment? Question, okay. Okay, so in ISKCON, there are different, I'm going to use this word properly, political preaching platforms. You've got some devotees, I'm not going to mention names, you have some ISKCON preachers, they're hardcore, hardline, ultra conservative. They'll go to somebody's house, and if they see something they don't like, they just throw it off the altar. I just heard of an experience like this. Okay? Then you have others. They are extremely liberal. And you've got people in the sense. Me, I'm very liberal. You can't get much liberal than me. Lokanath Maharaj once said, as a joke, half joke, half chastisement. Oh, Narantara, you are more merciful than Lord Chaitanya. But you know what? He was right. So my methodology is I am extremely liberal. The way I deal, see, I have a policy. Don't ask, don't tell. If they open the door, all right, you asked me. So I gently will say, all right, since you've asked, then I think you should do this, or like that. They don't ask. I am also very, very positive. So I always try to see the what's good in the situation. And the reason why I accept that particular aspect or tactic is because it's been my experience that if you always encourage a positive and encourage what they already do that is Krishna conscious, in time, all the other stuff goes away. I'm sure you know Krishna Prem Mehta, all right? His father, Vidura and Manjari. When Tamal Krishna first preached to them, they were in Dallas or Houston, I forget, maybe it was Houston. Vidura was already initiated in Pushti Marg, and he was already chanting so many rounds of Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama. So when Tamal Krishna started preaching to them, he didn't tell them, stop. How did he preach to them? He said, now add Hare Krishna mantra. And in due course of time, Vidura was chanting so many times Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama, and he got up to 64 rounds of Hare Krishna mantra. And you saw, I don't know if you were here, he used to be on the altar, right, on a daily basis. So that's the method I have. I don't worry about the bad stuff, the negative stuff. I see where a person is, has positive, and let that go. Accentuate, how shall we say, promote that. And whatever bad stuff, that will be taken care of. And this other stuff, it's not that important. What's important? Chanting, following the principles, and associating with devotees. Good enough? Okay? You're satisfied? We had up to 22 devotees online tonight. Right now we have 20. Hari Bol. Do we have a mridanga in the house? No mridangas? All right. You play harmonium? Can you give me... Can you play in D? You're going to have to tell me how to play. Huh?